thought-provoking conversation, impressive insight, not always the best company. Bob McCowan, Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So here's the deal. I have the contracts in front of me here, the commitments on the part of Rodgers to this program, which is questionable at best, obviously. But it says here that Damian Cox, Stephen Brunt, and John Shannon are to be available for 26 weeks each as co-host of this program. Now, that's 78 weeks of co-hosts. There are only 52 weeks of the year, and I don't work all those weeks, so there's some weeks in there I don't care about. But here's one of those days where nobody's available. And they're all in various places doing other things, which I'm sure will entertain you to no end. But as a result of this, I have the unique opportunity to do this show with all of my closest friends, which is to say I'm by myself today. So govern yourselves accordingly. You may feel that this is just too much of me and may want to go elsewhere. We made it through 1 hour, but we have two full more hours to go. Dwayne Casey will join us in a bit, the Raptors head coach, Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette, Darren Revelle, our business editor, Ann Merklinger of Own the Podium, now the new CEO of that organization, and Brunt, one of the co-hosts, will actually be with us from Vancouver, where Team Canada faces Mexico tomorrow night in the semifinals as they try and march on to the Olympic Games. That's the women's soccer team, of course. Meanwhile, much of the attention and focus of the hockey world, well, all the attention, I suppose, of the hockey world and much of the attention of the sporting world will be on Ottawa, the nation's capital, this weekend as the All-Star game gets set to kick off. And it begins tonight with the very exciting selection process. It is just like the old days. You choose, remember ball hockey, road hockey? Two guys are captains. Everybody else stands on the curb and you start picking guys. And in the absence of a better format, this is what the NHL has come up with. And so that will happen tonight. And there to take all of this in, our own Denny Potvin is with us. How are you?
Good, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm fine. You're in the brand new temporary studio in Ottawa, I see.
Yes, I am. It's quite fantastic. We're right here by the canal, and the canal is frozen.
I hear it's colder than hell there, too, Denny.
I have a little bit of cold air going right up my backside, Bob. But I'm quite comfortable, thank you.
What do you make of this format where, two captains choose sides? You know, they throw the puck out there and away we go. I mean, this is not a competitive game. It's fun and it's for the fans, whatever you think of it. But does this format work for you?
I like the format. I wouldn't want to be part of it, really. If I wasn't captain and picking the team myself, I'd really wonder about whether or not I was going to be picked last or number six on defense or wherever. But I think that is because every one of those players is a highly skilled player, and they get there because of the fact that they've got a lot of self-confidence and sometimes a little ego that goes with it. So I would imagine it's uncomfortable for everybody, as much as I hear many of them say, oh, I wouldn't mind being the guy last. I'd love to get the free car. I think they mind.
Yeah, I would think so, too. Here's the dilemma that the selection process being what it is. I understand the inhibitions that the players may have about this. My greater concern, though, is to the game itself. And there's an irony here because we all know what this game is. It's just for fun. But having said that, at the very least, when I sat down in front of my television set to watch this game, at least in previous years, I could assume for a few hours a rooting interest. Pick a team for whatever reason. Either my favorite team was represented by this conference or however they figured it out, whether it was Wales and Campbell's or East and West or North and South, there was at least the potential for a rooting interest. Who the hell am I rooting for this year?
Well, I think that you've fallen into that deep gray area where we're acknowledging that it's a big party. And there's not supposed to be an interest in who wins or who loses. It's just going to be entertainment, real entertainment value. I agree with you. In a sense, I can't play hockey unless I'm being competitive. I never could. So I don't like to playing shitty hockey. I don't like to play, those kind of games where nothing matters much. But on the other hand, it is a showcase, and I think you owe it to the employer. Ultimately, the NHL is there, and that's why there's so many players that are dissatisfied with some people not showing up.
I'll buy that. One of the things I've suggested in the past to spice this game up, and many have tried to figure out a way to make this a more meaningful event, and maybe you can't. And look, it's not just the NHL All-Star Game, I acknowledge. The Pro Bowl of the National Football League will go this weekend. It's a joke. Mm-hmm. Nobody even Hawaii even goes to it. Major League Baseball's All-Star Game is not what it once was. So they've all kind of gone the way of the dinosaur. At least the NHL's tried to spice it up. I'll give them that. But here's an idea. So let's go back to when you're still playing. And the All-Star Game comes around. And, of course, Denny Potvin is going to be a member of one of the teams. And I say to you, Potvin, we're putting $10 million in the penalty box in cash, winner take all. You going to play your ass off for that?
Well, if you're going back to the 70s and the 80s, people would be killing for that.
Yeah, maybe $1 million, huh?
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't probably take $10 million. But, if there's a financial reward of whatever it is, does that make some sense, should we not even try and make a competitive game out of this thing?
Well, I think anyone who says, look, I don't mind being, and I think Pavel Datsyuk said it, I don't mind being picked last because I wouldn't mind a nice, shiny new car.
Right.
Obviously, as much of these guys getting paid, it doesn't matter. They still have the love of getting free dinners and things that are free.
Right.
I have a little thing that I like to insert, and I'd certainly like to know how you feel about this. There is so much talk about the parity in the NHL. Number one team plays number 15 team in a conference any given night, and you don't know who's going to win the hockey game. How about if you had the Stanley Cup champion facing an all-star team? Something like we had in the 50s. Might be something pretty interesting. Then you'd really have a rooting interest. You'd have your Stanley Cup team represented, and then the rest of the National Hockey League has 20 players that are an all-star team. I would venture to say that would be a pretty interesting game.
Well, and that's exactly where I was going to go. And I do recall as a kid, as hard as it is for an entire generation to believe, the Toronto Maple Leafs actually did win a Stanley Cup once. In fact, they won a bunch of them in the 1960s. And that All-Star game to which you refer was the defending Stanley Cup champions against the All-Stars, and it was played as effectively the first game of the season or before the first official game of the season. So it would have been in early October or whenever. So I was going to ask you, that format was gone by the time you got to the National Hockey League, wasn't it?
Right. Yes, it was.
Yeah, so you never participated.
Yeah, I played, when I played, it was 74 Stanley Cup, All-Star game, and that was in Chicago, and then we just went conference versus conference.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I would love to see that come back, too. I guess the question still becomes, are you guaranteed a competitive game? Would the Boston Bruins, if this was the Boston Bruins against the All-Stars, would these teams wind up playing shinny, which is what we're going to see on Sunday, or is there actually something at stake, some pride at stake that will not take place this Sunday? And I don't know the answer to that. Do you?
Well, I think if you and I combine ideas, and that $10 million in the penalty box would make it pretty interesting for everybody. But I think you'd have a better chance of having a competitive game, because you have to understand, in my belief anyway, the only way you get an NHL player to really stand up and notice is to, in some way, put their pride on the line. And I think that issue would be on the line in such a competitive environment.
With Denny Potvin, who's live in Ottawa at our brand new set there that's been constructed for this weekend's festivities. Before we get to talk a little bit about the Senators, who you cover on a regular basis, Tonight, the selection process will take place with the two captains picking their teams, and you've referred to this. I am told that ticket sales for this have gone stupid, and what was, I think, a $25 ticket is now going for up to $1,000. Can you even begin to explain this phenomenon?
I think it is very interesting now, yes. I mostly because the people here in Ottawa have really been given a dose of wonderful hockey by the Ottawa Senators, a team certainly that has surprised many, including myself, in watching them come out of training camp and to be where they are now in a pretty solid situation where they might make the playoffs. So there's excitement in the city about hockey. It's at a casino. There are other interests involved. And I think people in this city absolutely love Zdeno Chara and even more so Daniel Alfredson. So I think a combination of that and the format, it's fun. I think a lot of people want to go and see who the last guy is going to be picked.
I got one more on All-Star Game related.
Okay.
and we've addressed this at least last night, maybe the night before. Ovechkin gets suspended for 3 games. That 3 games surrounds the All-Star festivities. Now, Ovechkin decides not to go to Ottawa. However, it raises the specter of, should the All-Star game be included in the suspension? In other words, should a suspended player be allowed to even go to the All-Star game?
Well, very good question. I'm quite disappointed that he's not here, and I don't know of any good reason why he's not here, other than the fact that all of a sudden the suspension in front of him represented an opportunity to use it as an excuse. And to say that I'm going to be a distraction at the NHL All-Star game, I think Ovechkin is forgetting that we've been watching him play for the last couple of years. He would hardly be noticed in this game.
Right.
So I'm not very happy with him skipping this All-Star game in Ottawa. And I think that he should deal with it more severely. I think the NHL should have suspended him for another league game based on not making this weekend.
Wow. So, I mean, your opinion is pretty solid on this. All right, let's get to the Senators in the few minutes we have left. Gene Melnyk was on with us the night before, I can't remember which. And he sounded genuinely surprised by the performance of his team. Now, you know Melnyk, he's invariably confident, but nonetheless surprised by what this team has been able to accomplish in what was supposed to be a rebuilding year, a year in which Eugene thought this team probably would be, he wouldn't say 15th in the conference, but he suggested, you know, as low as 14th in the conference. In a nutshell, in watching these guys, how has this performance manifested itself over the course of the last couple of months?
Well, I'm sitting in a bar in March with Brian Murray, and we're talking about the fate of the coach, Corey Clouston, and saying, you know, how are you going to replace that? And Brian Murray told me exactly what he wanted. And that person shows up in Paul McClain. He's exactly the communicator, he's exactly the guy that's got NHL experience behind the bench, maybe not as head coach, but has a lot of experience, also knows a lot of teams in the NHL. So Brian Murray wanted somebody that had experience but real good communicating skills. That's where it all started, I believe. Brian Murray got his man. Then coming out of training camp, we had Alfredson's healthy, Kuba's healthy, McCulloch is healthy, and we got a bunch of winning kids coming out of the American League Championship with a winning attitude. I think you put that blend together and made a pretty good stew.
Not to dwell on this, because it's ancient history, but you mentioned Corey Clouston and the suggestion perhaps that there were deficiencies in his... Well, what were they, would you say? Were they in his style, in his ability to communicate, in his history with the NHL and knowledge of the league? What do you think wound up being the result of the cause of his demise?
Well, one of them is having to coach players, you know, like Ruutu and Kovalev. I don't know that Corey Clouston was ready to coach people of that character and people who have been around that long. I think Paul McClain does have an advantage that he's got a much younger team to coach. Corey Clouston, I think, has gone back. I know that for a fact. Coaching junior, I suspect that someday he may get a shot at the NHL, and I would very strongly suspect that he might do well. But I think he needed to learn a little bit more of the difference between coaching coaching teenagers and making the move to pros. A lot of coaches have difficulty doing that.
With Denny Potvin, who's live with us in Ottawa at the All-Star Game festivities. The other thing we talked to Gene about was, and I'm going to make up some numbers here because I don't remember them exactly, but I looked at the standings and I said to him, you know, you're 4 or 5 points out of first place, but similarly, you're only 6 or 7 points ahead of the Toronto Maple Leafs, who at that point were in ninth, and the Leafs had 3 or 4 games in hand. So I said to myself, you know, everybody's optimistic in Ottawa right now, but in this league, the way things go, a 2 or 3 game losing streak, and all of a sudden, you're looking over your shoulder instead of straight ahead. Do you have a sense of how the fans in Ottawa would respond? Because obviously, they are an optimistic group right now. What do they feel if this team doesn't make it to the postseason now?
Wow, those are negative waves I don't want to have going through my head, to tell you honestly. The team has performed very well. I think that right now they're looking at possibly trying to get to 94, 96 points. It doesn't take all that much for them to be able to accomplish that in the remaining 30 games or so they have during the season. The games in hand are one thing. They've played more games than anybody else
in
the NHL at this break. But I also means that they're not going to be burdened with a heavy schedule going down the stretch. So I still look at this team as very much a team that is in a playoff spot and not a team that is about to lose that playoff spot.
They are young. But what do you are they a team that, and clearly they are improving. I mean, only from the standpoint of they got off to a crummy start. What were they, 1-5 in their first 6 games? So they played, you know, as well as they played well of late. Are you seeing tangible improvement, development, specifically in the new players, young players that they brought in?
Yeah, I mean, Carlson, for one, is obviously one that has really surprised a lot of people. But, you know, let's just remind everyone that, you know, Erik Karlsson is showing a tremendous upside offensively, but he's still not being used regularly to kill penalties, which is probably what, you know, a big-time defenseman should be doing, right? He should be able to combine a lot of both. So Paul MacLean is moving his players in the right direction. But that leadership that you're talking about, and it becomes very appropriate in the second half of the season, because any team you're going to face, whether a team that is bound not to be in the playoffs or a team that's headed for the playoffs, are going to be much tougher to beat. So games are more difficult to play and to win going down this stretch. So Ottawa's going to have to be that much better themselves. They've gone through a Western trip now where things went badly. They lost 3, and I think that that is somewhat of a wake-up call. So the guys that have done well over the course of the beginning of the season, I'm talking like Zach Smith, definitely has slowed down somewhat in the last 3 weeks. But the leadership group, Spezza, Alfredson, McCulloch, even Craig Anderson in goal, these are all the guys that can keep them on track, and it's going to be a big responsibility for them.
Well, I'd have to say that at least the expectations in Ottawa were probably pretty low at the beginning of this season. And,
absolutely.
When expectations are low and the product materializes, people are surprised and are more enthusiastic and buoyed by all that. Lord knows we have no familiarity with this here in Toronto, only with the former, that the expectations would be high, but the result would be crap. But listen, I'm coming down on Saturday. I assume I'll run into you. Nice to see you on the screen there. And enjoy yourself this weekend, and thanks a lot for this, Denny.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure.
Denny Potvin of Sportsnet in Ottawa, and there'll be plenty of you'll see plenty of that set and that setup on the Rideau Canal. I'm told it's like right on the canal in downtown Ottawa over the next few days. Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette will join us later for more hockey talk. But up next, we'll switch to basketball. What is the story with Andrea Bargnani, who was forced to sit out with an injury for numerous games, comes back, leads the Raptors to 2 consecutive road victories, but is hurt in the second one in Utah. What is his status? We'll see if the coach has found out. Dwayne Casey is next when Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Sportsnet tonight. Tonight at 10. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
26 past the hour, McCown on a radio program. For this Thursday, the 26th of January, later Mike Boone of the Montreal Gazette, Darren Revelle, our business editor from CNBC, Anne Merklinger, who's the new CEO of Own the Podium, and Stephen Brunt will join us from Vancouver, where he's watching women's soccer. Things weren't going too swimmingly for the Toronto Raptors, and they were in the midst of a West Coast or Western trip. It's not exactly a West Coast trip, but a Western trip. And then all of a sudden, Andrea Bargnani got healthy enough to play, comes back and starts filling it up, and the Raptors win a couple of ball games. And last night's was a long one. And but the bad news is Bargnani can't finish the game. It appears that he has re-injured the calf that kept him out of action. What did he miss? Six games, I think? Half dozen? The head coach of the Toronto Raptors, Dwayne Casey, joins us from Denver. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Hey, Bob. How you doing, buddy?
I'm fine, pal. But we are waiting to hear. I'm made to understand that some tests were conducted in Denver. I don't know whether you got an MRI. They were going to be sent to Toronto to be analyzed, and then you'd get some information as to the extent of Andrea's injury. Have you heard yet?
No, they're doing it as we speak right now. It's supposed to be done at 3:30. Denver time, and then they're going to send the results back to our doctors back there in Toronto, and we'll find out. He was moving a little bit better this morning, but again, we just want to err on the side of caution and make sure that it's nothing worse than what it was in the beginning. And the thing about it, Bob, he played big minutes in both games, and last night's overtime, two overtimes, didn't help the situation, and some of it was fatigue and put a little bit more pressure on it than. But hopefully it's not as bad, and hopefully we'll miss as many games. And it's funny that you mentioned how many games he missed. I think that you know, I can almost count the ones because of our offensive woes.
Yeah.
That we had because he was out. He does so much for our team, and that's why I think it's so funny when I first got to Toronto, people talked about, well, is he a first pick or whatever. I tell you what, Andrea is as talented as the big guys I've been around, and I've been around Dirk and Sean Kemp and some really good four men around in the NBA, and he's just as talented, and the future is all in front of him.
Coach, did you see something happen during the game where he might have tweaked the injury?
I looked for it, Bob, and I didn't see it exactly. I think, again, it was just the overall fatigue, altitude, that he's been out for so many games in a couple of weeks. And, I think that had just as much to do with it as anything. But I didn't see anything specific, a specific move or a specific jump or anything like that to tweak it. But, he said he didn't feel it happen. It just came on all at once as we were getting ready to go into a timeout.
With Dwayne Casey, the head coach of the Toronto Raptors from Denver, where they'll take on the Nuggets next as this road to excursion continues. You have to assume, I guess, at this point, that he's going to miss at least the Denver game tomorrow night, although you said he was moving better. Did you have a workout this morning? Did you practice?
No, we're at the gym now, but our trainer saw him and mentioned the fact that he was moving a little bit better, but that doesn't mean that he's going to go. And right now, we still don't know. I think the MRI is going to tell us a lot and how he feels tomorrow. And we probably will wait until a game-time decision to see. But, again, if it's close, we don't want to, do anything that's going to harm him long-term, and we'll hold him out. But, again, we'll leave that into the hands of the doctors.
Of course, Bargnani was the single biggest point of difference in this ball club over the last two games, which both resulted in victories. We can't deny that. At the same time, you got a big offensive performance from Linus Klaza last night. He got 25, I think. Klaza was out for a significant portion at the beginning of this season. Did you do something strategically different to get the ball more in his hands the last couple of games?
Well, we imitated him being Andrea in that last couple of overtimes.
Yeah.
Just ran a lot of things for him that we normally run for Andrea. And the great thing about it, Bob, is the fact that is Linus, he is just now getting his game shape or game legs back. When you miss that significant, that length of time that he's missed after surgery, you're not going to come back and be hitting on all cylinders. So he's going to have good nights and bad nights, and last night was a very good night for him. But strategically, what we did, we just put him in Andrea's position, ran him off screens, put him in pick and roll, spotted him up in our pick and roll offense, and he knocked down some big shots. So hopefully, if Andrea can go, he can step in and give us that punch. Also, Jared Bayless coming back gives us another punch also at the point guard position, Bob. And I think he gives us, even though he didn't shoot the ball well, he still got into the cracks. He still penetrated the defense and found the open people. So that was a big plus for us. And now we don't lose as much when Jose goes out and takes his break and we put in Jared. So we still have a solid point guard at that position.
Let me throw something at you, Coach, that I don't think you and I have talked about much, and I don't know how much I've talked about it over the years in watching basketball, but we understand that there are certain players who are cast as sixth man or first guys off the bench, and many excel at it. The NBA actually has an award for it, so we understand it's an important position. But I wonder often if guys get typecast in that role, and coaches are reluctant to give them more minutes or start them. And you have a guy who, I guess, for almost all his career has been in that role, and that's Leandro Barbosa, who was that guy at Phoenix, or one of those guys at Phoenix, and has been one of those guys for the most part here in Toronto. And I don't have numbers to justify this, but I would say on a minutes played, number of points scored, you know, he'd be at least one of your most efficient offensive guys. Tell me about being the first guy off the bench, or one of the first off the bench, and why those guys rarely evolve into starters.
I tell you what, it really started with Frank Ramsey back with the Boston Celtics, who is a fellow Kentucky guy, and the sixth man coming off the bench. He made it cool back way back in the 50s, but you know, we had Jason Terry in Dallas.
Yep.
And those guys are so valuable coming in at that position, and as far as coming off the bench with energy and, you know, playing that role. The key with that is accepting that role, accepting coming off the bench with energy, punch. And Leandro epitomizes that position for us. You've got to have something coming off the bench, and you need a spark. And he's instant energy, instant offense. And again, as a coach, I would be afraid to start him because now what do we have coming off the bench at that position? And you got to have a security blanket knowing that when you put someone in that you're going to get some instant offense, and he's that guy for us. Not only is he a sixth man for us, Bob, he's also a closer. You know, he's a guy in there we're going to have in a crunch time and to close games for us. So that's huge. You're right. Some guys get typecast as that, but again, everybody needs that bench production, those bench points, that bench energy. And for us, we're looking for that balance other than Leandro.
But you would understand as an ex-athlete and now as a coach for some period of time, there is a competitiveness that exists in all athletes, and most especially at athletes at the level we are now talking about.
Right.
And I find it interesting that there aren't more guys in Leandro's position who don't voice their displeasure with the fact that they're not getting as many minutes as they think they might deserve.
That is a great point. But the good thing about it, though, is every team in the league are looking. That's a niche for each player like that.
There's sure.
A position on 30 teams for a guy like Leandro, and we're all as a coach and an organization are looking for players like that, you know, that fills that role. And the most important thing, and you said it, that accepts that role. And that's what we do with our team. We hand out role cards. Each player on our team has a role card of what his job is for our team. And number one on Leandro's card is a six-man player, you know, bench energy, bench points, you know, all those things but they're all related to substitution, accepting that role. And again, he accepts it. He really embraces it. And that's so important because you could have some guys in that position coming off the bench half-heartedly, and it would not be as effective as a guy who embraces it. Jason Terry last year was sixth man of the year. He embraced it. He loved it. He knew kind of when he was coming to the game, as Leandro does. So for us, I think Leandro is a very, very important part of what we do this season and also going forward. You need those bench production points coming off and giving you that boost that we have.
Tomorrow night against the Nuggets in Denver, which has been a terrible place for the Toronto Raptors, which probably should mean nothing because it's, you know, different players all the time. And, you know, I don't know how aware guys are of or care what happened before they got to the organization. But that is a truism. Then Sunday in New Jersey to kind of end this trip and then back home against Atlanta on Tuesday. So there's not much let up in this condensed season. It's great for fans. Must be hell for coaches, though, huh?
Right, yeah, I tell you what, it's really tough, Bob, because, you know, first of all, the human body, I don't think, was made to hold up this number of games. Now, you look around the league and look at the number of injuries that are happening to star players and look at our team. You know, Andre, we had that 3 games in 3 nights, and boom, all at once, we have a strained calf muscle with our star player who's logging big minutes, and we've got to have him on the floor to – you know, to have a sense of success for us. And I think that's important. So, but again, so many games and so many nights. And the most important thing, there's not recovery time between games. Like today should be an off day, but we got guys here in the gym working, guys getting treatment, then boom, tomorrow night you have another game. Then we fly across country to play New Jersey. So they're all rapid fire. And again, it's hard on the human body, but that's the hand we dealt with. Everybody's dealing with it. And I'm really happy with our guys, the way they've competed. You know, each and every game they've brought it to the court each night. And we've got to continue to do that. And now somebody has to step up and take the slack for Andre if he can't go. But I'm excited about our team, Bob. I think our defensive improvement has shown. I think we're number 5 or 6 in the NBA in defensive field goal percentage. Right. Coming from 29th last year. So our guys are taking pride in that right now. Now we just got to get our offense up to snuff and have that to come out to equal wins.
Coach, good luck tomorrow night and with the last game of the trip on the weekend, and we'll see you when you get back here. Thanks a lot for this. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Bob. No problem, buddy.
Coach Dwayne Casey of the Toronto Raptors from Denver, and again, he does not know, we do not know, what the results of the MRI for Andrea Bargnani are or will be. Coach indicated that he thought 5:30 our time was a key time. I don't know whether that was when the MRI is going to take place. And they'll send the results of the MRI back here to Toronto. The doctors here will look at it, make an assessment of it, and then convey the information if that can take place within the next hour and a half or whenever we get the information, we'll pass it along to you. Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette, when we come back and Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Nigel Reed and Bobby Arushi score big on The Soccer Show tonight at 8. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Minutes before the hour. So as we reach the All-Star break in the National Hockey League, one of the stories that we've watched with interest, and certainly they are compelled by it in La Belle Province, is, of course, the plight of the Montreal Canadiens, who've had a season that to date they would like to forget in terms of productivity. Having said that, the Canadiens have won their last two hockey games. That may be a moot point. It may not mean anything when all is said and done, but small victories when you get them. And yet, even though we're at the All-Star break, even though it's a chance to kind of catch your breath, even though the team has won 2 in a row, the Montreal Canadiens are all in a kerfuffle, or the media is, or the fans are, or somebody is, over P.K. Subban, what he is, what he will be, and the reason for his benching the other night for, I think, most of, if not all, of the second period. Joining us to discuss this topic is Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette. Boone, you guys just can't leave well enough alone, can you?
Hey, don't throw me into that lynch mob,
okay.
Bob. I'm a very much a pro-PK guy, and I will go on record right at the beginning of our conversation. to say that if they trade him, it will be the greatest error since the Patrick Waugh trade.
Now, I mean, I have seen that suggestion, but I just assumed that that suggestion was coming from complete morons who don't know anything about what they're talking.
Also known as the press corps.
Sorry?
Also known as the press corps.
Same thing.
Yeah.
But you don't think that there's... Is there really a notion? Is there a push? Is anybody that knows anything about anything really thinking about this?
Well, if they still think they can make the playoffs, and if they convince themselves, they meaning Pierre Gauthier and his merry men up in the executive suite at the Bell Center, if they can convince themselves that some sort of trade deadline or pre-trade deadline deal can put them over the top in terms of qualifying, you got to look at what assets they've got. And PK is pretty near the top of the list. I think as a function of ability and age, only Carey Price would rank higher. And he, of course, is an absolute untouchable. PK, maybe not so untouchable.
Well, but would you not concur that if such a message was disseminated from the hallowed offices there at the Centre Bell, that P.K. Subban might be had, you wouldn't expect any more than 29 teams to be anxiously calling, would you?
Absolutely.
Like, everybody would want this guy, wouldn't they?
I would think so. A 22-year-old puck-moving defenseman with a ton of natural ability, just kind of scratching his potential at this stage of his career. They don't grow on trees. You know, I think power forwards do grow on trees to some extent. But
yeah,
this is a puck-moving defenseman is a very rare commodity in the league, and you absolutely need one to win.
So you're around this guy. I've never met him. I've talked to him. We've interviewed him on this program, and he seems very cordial. Fun-loving, most certainly.
Yeah.
There is a sense that he is, and I'm going to throw some words out that may not be completely accurate, but some have said he's selfish. Some have said he is, he doesn't try hard enough. He is somewhat aloof, that practices to him are nothing more than a waste of time. He likes games. He doesn't like practices. How much of that fits what you know of P.K. Subban?
Well, I should have been taking notes as you went through it, Bob, but off the
okay,
top, you said selfish.
Selfish.
He does not shun the spotlight. I think he enjoys the amount of attention that's being paid to
him. Fair enough.
This does not make him unique in pro sports. I don't think his style of play is selfish in the way that Mike Camilleri's was. He wants the puck all the time because he's confident of his own abilities. There are sequences in games when his stick tapping resembles that of a woodpecker.
Yeah,
he's a confident kid, and I think you have to like that. But selfish to the detriment of other guys on the team? No, I don't think so. I think his personality maybe rubs. And here I'll differentiate between what goes on in the room and what goes on in the great cavernous Bell Center, where his flamboyance is an immense hit. See, this is the other thing about trading him. Part of calculating the value, you'd have to get something really, really special in return, or people here would go berserk because they love him. You know?
Well, and yes, and on a team of, a combination of underachievers, underperformers, and guys who really just aren't that good anyway.
Yeah, and competent professionals.
There's
and,
a few.
People that go about their business. But this is Montreal, man. You got to have a little bit of hair, you know?
Oh, well, this is the showbiz that you need, you want, and I would think that Montreal fans adore this guy, especially on a team that offers very little else in terms of captivating and entertainment.
Absolutely. And moreover, has offered very little else over a period of some years. You know, you got to go back to Lafleur's days to find somebody who winds up in his own end, starts moving up the ice, and it's a wave that sweeps through the building. The chanting starts. People are getting up out of their seats. You know, that hasn't happened in a long time, and nor does it happen terribly often when P. Piquet is on the bench, as he was for the second period last night.
Well, I submit to you, Mr. Boone, that if you were the proprietor of a retail store along St. Catherine or one of the other prominent promenades in Montreal, and Piquet Subban was traded, I would board up my windows out front, as I fear for what Montreal Canadiens fans would do if they move this guy out.
Yeah, just as a precaution, I've taken a long position on plywood.
Yeah, I would say that is a highly recommended analysis. Mr. Boone, it is always my pleasure. Are you heading to Ottawa by any chance? Are you going to sit this one out?
My plans call for not watching a single nanosecond of this nonsense, Bob, but maybe that's just me.
Good boy. I'd be with you, except I'm going.
All righty.
Mike Boone of the Montreal Gazette. Ahead, all the facts and figures you need for what it's going to cost you for a ticket to the Super Bowl. We have had this fascination for decades now, and yet this is one of the most intriguing parts I find of the Super Bowl week is, well, what are they getting for tickets? Darren Revelle, our business editor, has that detail. And Anne Merklinger, new CEO of Own the Podium. How might she change the direction? Stephen Brunt from Vancouver, where the women's soccer team marches on and gets set to play Mexico. That's all in the next hour on Primetime.